What's Australia given the world? How about Tim Tams, polymer banknotes, and a very specific electoral system?
We've got compulsory voting,
preferential voting,
the secret ballot, the democracy sausage.
I'm Annabelle Crabb. Join me for the rollicking backstory of our democratic dreamers and how our electoral system works today. It's called Annabelle Crabb's Civic Duty, and you can stream all the episodes now on ABC iView.
From Wandering Country, I'm Luke Sydenham-Dunton, and today on The Breakfast Wrap.
The New South Wales Parliamentary Liberal Party has met this morning to fill the vacancy.
There is another state Liberal leader that's just taken over, this time in New South Wales. Mark Speakman is out and Kelly Sloan is in. We'll find out just what's happened in New South Wales and what it has to do with the federal Liberal Party.
I have faced the brand damage that has emanated from Canberra with a disarray since the May election.
You'll hear what a senior federal Liberal has to say about that comment from the outgoing New South Wales Premier. And then...
Well, I think it's an embarrassment. And it's pretty clear that the Prime Minister wasn't fighting very hard.
The Greens aren't happy about COP31 going to Istanbul. Neither is the city of Adelaide.
Well, we're all terribly disappointed. It would have been a huge boost to the city. It would have put us on the world stage so that everyone would be talking about the Adelaide Agreement.
The Mayor of Adelaide shares her disappointment as COP31 goes to Turkey. From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Welcome to the last Breakfast Wrap episode of the week, and the federal election fallout continues for the Liberal Party in New South Wales. That, at least, is the line from the outgoing opposition leader Mark Speakman that you just heard. One of the many factors he said has led to his resignation. He said he wasn't able to get clean air and prosecute his agenda. This morning, Kelly Sloan has been elected unopposed as the new leader of the New South Wales Liberal Party. The first-term MP was the only person to nominate for the position after the role was vacated yesterday afternoon. Well, someone who's been following this closely is Alex Smith, state political editor for the Sydney Morning Herald. She was up incredibly early and she came on before Kelly Sloan was confirmed as the new leader, although she was expected at the time. And she explained just why Mark Speakman has called time, or rather, had time called for him.
I think he gave a very dignified press conference, I must say, given the events that had unfolded throughout the day where he was staying in no uncertain terms and then it became very clear that his position was untenable. I think he really had no option in the end to go, though, and listen to the advice of his colleagues because he had lost the support of the party room. There was a leader in waiting in Kelly Sloan, and I think he realised that given the circumstances, the polling of New South Wales Liberals is really going down. They're not heading in the direction that they need to head to win the next election. And then he had lost the support of his colleagues. There was just no option for Mark Speakman left, despite his strong words that he started the day with.
What do you think it is that really sharpened the minds of his critics within the Liberal Party to say, listen, you've got to go?
Well, this is the difficult thing, and I think this is why Mark Speakman found it so difficult to go in the end and really had to be pushed out, because there was no significant missteps that Mark Speakman made. He was well-liked, respected, but the reality is the New South Wales Liberals have taken a very big hit after the federal election. The brand damage is significant, and it was going to be difficult for Mark Speakman to turn that around. I would say it's going to be difficult for anybody to turn that around, but he wasn't managing it. And I think that there are many MPs in his party room who are getting very nervous. They're worried they won't be able to hold their jobs when New South Wales goes to the polls in March 2027. And I think they got to a point where, while they respected him, they thought he was doing as good a job as he possibly could under circumstances. They needed a reset and a new face to try and help them turn things around.
Alex, what did you make of his comments yesterday about this, what he was describing as brand damage from Canberra? Does that stick?
I think it does. I mean, I think it's an easy excuse for any Liberal Party leader anywhere at the moment. But I think the reality is there is significant brand damage after the federal election, whether New South Wales like it or not. And I think that's going to be something that they'll really struggle to overcome. They don't have that long to try and reshape their identity, you know, try and make it clear that they are different to their federal counterparts. They're doing, you know, this week, amazingly, really, Mark Speakman managed to convince his party room to stick with a net zero by 2050 commitment, which obviously is very different to his federal parliamentary colleagues. So in a lot of ways, New South Wales has tried very hard to differentiate themselves from the federal Liberals. But there is still, I think, brand damage there. They have time to certainly shape that to some degree, I think. And I do wonder whether how long they can stick to that argument that they were harmed by the actions of their federal, you know, colleagues during the federal election and the campaign that was run. But at the moment, I do think it is legitimate to argue that voters are looking at the New South Wales Liberals in the same way they're looking at Liberals in Canberra.
Mr. Speakman has endorsed Kelly Sloane, first-term MP, member for Vaucluse, as his replacement. She originally hails from South Australia, was a journalist with the ABC and then in commercial media, and then moved on to roles in the private and community sector as well. What do you think her chances are of rallying the party, Alex?
Well, I think she's got significant support, so that's a very good start for her. But she does have a big task ahead of her. You know, everything that was difficult for Mark Speakman will be difficult for Kelly Sloane. She also has another significant hurdle, I think, in that she hasn't been around the party for all that long, which may in some ways help her, but it also means she probably isn't as used to dealing with, you know, the inner workings of the Liberal Party. I think she will be a new face. The New South Wales Liberals have tried hard but not always succeeded to have a better female representation. They've got the best they've got had at the moment, had previously in the parliament at the moment. And I think she is one of those strong female leaders in the parliamentary party. So that will be a plus for her and for the party, I think. But nonetheless, she still inherits all the problems that Mark Speakman had that he couldn't shake, and I think any leader will struggle with, and that is, you know, the brand damage.
And you were just listening to Alex Smith there, the state political editor for the Sydney Morning Herald. She's got a busy day ahead covering yet another change in the Liberal Party. So just a reminder of what Mark Speakman said last night, apportioning a bit of blame to the federal wing of the Liberal Party.
I faced the statistical unlikelihood of a first-term opposition winning an election. I have faced the brand damage that has emanated from Canberra with a disarray since the May election.
Well, this morning, we also interviewed Federal Liberal Shadow Minister Alex Hawke, and Sally asked him specifically about that comment.
Is there a bleeding of the troubles from federal politics into the states, in your view, Alex Hawke?
Well, certainly with brand issues around the country, of course, you know, the Liberal brand is the Liberal brand, but the people are very good here in New South Wales at distinguishing between the state and federal issues. I mean, they know Premier Minns. He's new. They're giving him a go, quite rightly. They're also testing him. I mean, he started to say, for example, don't get used to world-class infrastructure in Sydney, you know, i.e. we can't fund it anymore. You know, I think people will judge him on his record. But of course, you know, when you have division in a political party, it resonates. There's no doubt about that.
What do you think of first-term MP Kelly Sloane, the member for Vaucluse?
Oh, look, she's fantastic. I do think it's good that new MPs are considered. It's not a time-serving process in politics. Experience matters in all professions, but, you know, Kelly's a very experienced person in the media, and her background is excellent, just like any other contenders will be. And I'm glad the Liberal Party is looking at people like Jess Wilson to lead us in Victoria, a new generation, a millennial generation. You're starting to see people come through our ranks and take leadership for the future.
So a bit of endorsement from some in the federal Liberal Party, at least from Alex Hawke, for the new opposition leader in New South Wales, Kelly Sloane. We'll come back to this in a tick with our Friday political panel. Well, yesterday we heard from Istanbul about why Turkey was so keen to host the COP31 climate summit. After more than 3 years of lobbying, Australia's dropped its bid to host next year's major climate meeting, instead agreeing that it could go to Turkey, but on the proviso that it's chaired by Australia's climate change minister, Chris Bowen. And while Labor is claiming the win, Adelaide is mourning the loss. It was tipped to host, and now it's coming to terms with a global stage being swiped by Turkey and an economic boost that will be going to Istanbul instead. It's left a bitter taste for many in the festival state, with the Premier labelling the process for deciding the COP31 host as obscene.
We put our best foot forward. We won the rights as a city and a state to host COP if it was won internationally. Internationally, that wasn't able to be achieved for reasons that I think come down to an obscene process that the UN has.
Peter Malinauskas, the South Australian Premier, speaking yesterday. Dr. Jane Lomax-Smith is the Lord Mayor of the City of Adelaide. She came on with Sally and she shared this take.
Well, we're all terribly disappointed. It would have been a huge boost to the city. It would have put us on the world stage so that everyone would be talking about the Adelaide Agreement. But on top of that, it would have brought some really practical solutions. Having now attended my very first COP, I realised that on one level you can be excited about the economic opportunity of having 50,000 plus people coming to town and filling up the hotels and restaurants and shops. But on another level, it is an extraordinary opportunity to learn about activities. And one of the areas that interested me as a mayor was the fact that local government was front and centre in dealing with remediation, adaptation, and the job we have to do to be resilient in the future. I think that people sometimes forget that it's not just about net zero and going to renewables, which of course South Australia is well advanced in. We're at 75% now. We lead Australia and are right up there globally. But we still have the impact of climate change. There can't be an Australian that doesn't know that our droughts are getting worse, our floods are getting more dangerous, the heat in our cities is becoming unbearable on several days of the year and getting more common.
What was the estimated cost for hosting COP in Adelaide?
Well, we weren't paying, that's the first thing, but all the money was going to flood into us. So I don't think there's any South Australian who would say we don't want the Commonwealth to spend money in our state and produce economic benefit.
So what was the estimate of the Commonwealth cost to have COP in Australia?
I don't know the numbers, but if money's flowing to South Australia, I, for one, am not going to complain.
So that is the view from South Australia, but what about the broader picture, especially among those hoping Australia could have shaped the conversation on climate action? Larissa Waters is the leader of the Greens, and she told Sally just what she thinks of Australia losing the summit.
Well, I think it's an embarrassment, and it's pretty clear that the Prime Minister wasn't fighting very hard to get the hosting rights for this conference. And if you look at his climate track record, it's pretty clear why he wasn't fighting hard. I think they wanted to avoid the scrutiny of the fact that they, within 2 weeks of re-winning government, approved the biggest gas plant in the Southern Hemisphere that would have more emissions than all of our coal-fired power stations put together over 10 years, an absolute carbon bomb. The fact that they've ticked off on more than 30 other coal and gas projects since they took government. The fact that they're currently trying to rewrite our environmental laws to fast track coal and gas approvals. And the fact that there's an algal bloom that's driven by a marine heat wave that's caused by climate change on the beaches of Adelaide. So frankly, I think, and we're reading some of the papers today, that there's private relief in the government because their very, very close relationship with the coal and gas industry won't be put under scrutiny.
The government failed to reveal how much hosting the event would have cost. Did you have concern about costs? Have we maybe dodged a bullet here?
I think that cost argument is a red herring. People are in a genuine cost of living crisis, and the government could be choosing to fix that. And instead, they're giving billions to Donald Trump for nuclear submarines that we might never get, and billions of dollars to property investors to accumulate homes when many people don't have one at all. So I think the cost argument was now a bit of a convenient fig leaf for a government that actually is very comfortable ticking off on coal and gas projects, doesn't want to listen to the Pacific's demands that we stop opening new coal and gas, and frankly is feeling relief that we now won't have the scrutiny that actually their government should be facing.
The government says the deal will ensure there is a pre-COP event in the Pacific. Do you welcome that?
Look, that's a consolation prize, but obviously the Pacific nations have been very, very clear in their ask of the world and their ask of Australia in particular, and that's for us to stop opening coal and gas mines that are literally threatening their continued existence. The sea level rise is lapping at their doors, and that salt water incursion into their food producing land is making their lives really hard, not to mention all the increased cyclones and other turbocharged extreme weather events. So we welcome focus on that. Our Pacific neighbours deserve our support, and we should be genuinely listening to them. It's great that we're going to have a meeting, but actually less words and more action.
Senator, on another matter, the government says it still wants its environmental law reforms to pass Parliament before the end of the year. Do you believe that's possible with the final sitting week next week?
I'm really very suspicious about this time frame. The Business Council, the Minerals Council, and big coal and gas companies like Alcoa and Chevron and Woodside are saying that they want this environmental law rewrite by the end of Christmas. And actually, there's no real time frame here except what big business and the big miners and the big loggers are pushing for. I think there's an opportunity for the government to choose who they want to work with. Do they want to work with the coalition who just dumped their commitment to net zero? The anti-science, anti-climate coalition, that's one pathway to deliver for big mining and the big loggers. Or they can have serious discussions with the Greens and write some environmental laws that actually protect forests, that actually protect the climate, and that don't fast-track coal and gas approvals.
Larissa Waters is the federal leader of the Greens. She was speaking to Sally Sara there on Radio National Breakfast. Well, a little while after that, we got more on the COP summit with our Friday political panel. Michelle Grattan, professorial fellow at the University of Canberra, also the chief political correspondent at The Conversation, was joined by Tom McElroy, the political editor for The Guardian, along with Mel Clark, our very own political correspondent. And Sally started with Michelle, talking about Australia's negotiations with Turkey over the COP summit.
It's a mixed result. I think that if it had happened, say, a year ago, it would have been much more of a blow, because I think that enthusiasm for hosting this COP has really diminished in many sections of the government in recent times. The cost was going to be enormous, and it was seen as bringing its own problems. So in a way, they have got a compromise where they've got a conference for the Pacific countries, not that that satisfies those countries, but they've got some meeting for them. And also Minister Bowen is going to be central in the negotiations. But that itself, I think, is a major problem, because there is so much work to do with the energy transition that to have the chief minister who's in charge of that diverted into COP negotiations, I think, is frankly a negative.
Has the global political importance of COP walked back slightly with COP30 as well? The United States not turning out in full force, others as well, some were running late with their plans about how they're going to reduce emissions. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I think the dynamics of COP is starting to change. I've been struck this week of how little coverage there has been from the conference. It's the critical week. It's barely sort of registered in Australia. I agree with Michelle that the politics are a bit mixed for COP30. COP31 next year. I think it could turn out to be something of a blessing in disguise. You know, power prices, a shift in the kind of global politics of the renewable transition. This time next year, things could be quite different, and it might be helpful for Labor that they're slightly less exposed. You know, tens of thousands of people showing up in Adelaide might have been difficult.
Michelle, started off with talk of Liberal leadership at the beginning of this week at the federal level. The week is ending with changes in leadership in both Victoria and New South Wales at the state level. What's happening for the Liberal Party? What's your read on the bigger picture right now?
The bigger picture is, I think, that the party is really in a dreadful position in a number of places, federally and, of course, in several states. Now, we've seen the Victorian and New South Wales changes. I don't think that anyone thinks that the Liberals will have much chance at the next New South Wales election. And I think in Victoria, which is particularly interesting because you've got a government really that's unpopular and not performing well there, but the Liberals just don't seem to be able to make any impact and fight internally all the time. Now, whether this new leader will have any better run, who knows? But certainly that's interesting. Of course, all the attention now turns to Susan Lee, and she's got to get through next week, the final week of Parliament. Most people will think she will get through next week and stay as leader into the new year, but of course, one never knows.
Tom, I was talking with Alex Hawke earlier, and we had a listen to Mark Speakman, the opposition leader in New South Wales, outgoing, in brackets, his comments about brand damage after the federal election. What did you think of those remarks?
I thought they were quite frank. I think it's true that the brand damage, the rot is coming from Canberra in a big way. I think the Liberal branches around the country, and Alex Hawke, someone that would know about this, have structural problems. You know, the membership is aging out of the political system. General image, I think, going to Michelle's point, is that these organisations spend their whole time fighting amongst themselves, you know, tearing each other to shreds. And I think on some issues like climate change and other things, they're kind of getting away from where the demographic of the voter base is. So I think if these new leaders, if this new generation of leaders can reorient things and fix the organisational side of the parties to kind of promote stronger membership and better policy, it could be an opportunity.
What's the spotter's guide here, Mel? If Susan Lee does get through next week, which we're expecting that she will, but anything can happen, what sort of manoeuvrings will we be expecting from her likely opponents over the summer?
Yeah, I think the first thing you can expect is everyone to take a breath, because there is a fair degree of exhaustion amongst MPs. It turns out this sort of internal fighting is quite tiring. But
it's good cardio.
That's right. It's going to be some benefit from it.
Observers too.
Yeah. But I think the time frame we need to look at is really what happens between, say, Australia Day and the budget. If you were going to have a leadership change, you would want to do it then to give enough time for someone, the replacement, to establish themselves, but also do it with enough, hopefully, memory loss from the public by the time of voting actually comes around, that this drama is too far from minds. But it's not settled as to who that replacement would be. Mm. And that means that the period after this sitting week does become a bit of a battle of who can manage to muster the numbers, who can make the case, and who can set up a scenario so that the challenge is done as cleanly as possible. That's what they would want. So do you need someone else willing to sink the knife so that the successor doesn't have to be the one doing it? These are the sorts of things that need to be figured out if you're doing the backroom dark arts.
A little bit like the end of a Harry Potter book there. You'll have to get back on the Hogwarts Express after summer to see what happens next with the Liberal Party leadership. Mel Clark there, along with Michelle Grattan and Tom McElroy. They were in the Parliament House studio along with Sally Sara. Thank you very much for listening to The Breakfast Wrap right across the week and all of the interviews from Sally. Our team at Radio National Breakfast is behind all of them, booking and researching the guests you hear across this show. And The Breakfast Wrap is produced by a wonderful rotating team. Today it was produced by Josie Scott. Our executive producer is, as always, Eleni Soltis. And I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon. Have a nice weekend. We'll see you next Monday.